Morning, colleagues. Welcome to this meeting of Cabinet. Can I have a note of any apologies, please?
Councillors Constable and Johnston.
Thanks. Just for noting, Councillor Johnston is celebrating this morning the birth of our first grandchild, so we wish her all the best. Why she's not here, Councillor Constable, as a result, is substituting for her at another meeting, which is why we're slightly light on the elected member side today. In the order of business.
Per the agenda.
Could I just ask that, could we continue item 7, the inspection of Tynewater Primary School, to the next meeting, purely from the point of view of my wife teaches at that school and as such would have to declare an interest, which would then make us in court. So, if we don't mind, for no other reason than that, if we could continue that to the next meeting. That then takes us on to item 4, minute of the meeting of the 14th of January. Can I just point on page 6, under the inspection of the Council Adoption Services, the bottom paragraph there, if we look three lines from the bottom, it says many children continue to drift into care, and I think in fact it should be some children continue to drift in care, as opposed to into. So if we could perhaps have that amended, if members are okay with that. Any other questions or comment to the minute? Happy to approve. Which takes us then on to item 5, which is inspection of St Mary's Primary School nursery class.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Again, we bring another very good report from an inspection of a nursery school by the Care Inspectorate. And as you can see in the report, the quality of care and support is very good, quality of environment is good, quality of staffing is very good, and the quality of management and leadership very good. The inspection team noted that the children were welcomed into a happy learning environment where they enjoy a wide variety of stimulation and challenging experiences. The staff are enthusiastic and caring and work well together to offer support to children and their families. So I'm asking the Cabinet to note the content of the inspection report, to pass this report to performance review and scrutiny for its consideration, and congratulate the management and staff connected with St Mary's Primary School for the good work being carried out. And again, note, whilst acknowledging the good work, the Council will continue to challenge, support and monitor the service in relation to achieving sustained excellence through further improving performance.
Thanks, Mary. Vic.
Thanks, Owen. Just very briefly, I mean, yet again, another very good inspection report for one of our nursery schools. And I was, as Mary has alluded, particularly delighted to read the comments in 2.6 that the staff value the individual child and provide a warm and caring environment. That surely is what nursery education is all about. So it's a delightful report. And like Mary, I hope we can congratulate the staff on that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's certainly encouraging to see the trend of very positive reports and given the importance of early years in a child's development. So yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Can we agree the recommendations in the report? Thank you. That then takes us to item 6, which is the inspection of Moorfoot Primary Nursery Class.
So again, we're following on in this very positive way forward. Moorfoot was inspected, an unannounced inspection by the Care Inspectorate, and again, they found the quality of care and support very good, the quality of the environment very good, the quality of staffing very good, and the quality of management and leadership very good. The inspection team noticed that the nursery provided children with very good play and learning opportunities. There was very good leadership provided by the nursery teacher, and effective teamwork by staff ensures support is given to children and their families to ensure the best outcomes for children. So again, the Cabinet is asked to note the content of the inspection report, pass this report to performance review and scrutiny, congratulate the management and staff, and note again, whilst acknowledging the good work being carried out, we'll continue to challenge for improvement.
Thanks, Mary. Yeah, I would like to endorse the recommendations at 5.3 and congratulate the management and staff of the school.
Again, always very encouraging to see such positive comments coming back. Agree the recommendations? Which then takes us to item 8, a report on the Education Convener Advisory Group.
This is just an update to report on the Education Convener Advisory Group. We did say we would report back at the earliest possible opportunity. We've had a review. There's been a new cabinet holder has been appointed, and we're now looking at forming an education committee in place of the advisory group. And we're doing a scoping exercise at the moment for that, and we will bring a report to Council in March.
Thank you very much, Convener. As I believe most of us are aware, there are basically two models that I believe happen within Scottish Council. One is Cabinet and the other are various committees, including Education Committee. I imagine that we're considering the implications of that and the whole structure of Cabinet. The one that struck us was that we've noticed over the last 6 or 7 years that there has been times when different agreements have broken down and the balance of items that have been remitted to Cabinet and up to Council has changed quite remarkably. And at times it seemed that Cabinet was short on influence and matters to consider. And the other thing that we mentioned was that I'm struggling to remember what it was we were going to... Oh yes, it was the balance of related committees and their relationship to an education committee would also change quite considerably. We don't mind where we sit in whatever forum, as long as the education committee's matters come to us and that we have a vote as required. I do feel that there would be probably a narrowing of the scope necessarily of the things that come under an education remit as interpreted by Cabinet when it came within committee. And I suppose the only thing that gives us slight cause for comment and concern is that something that had taken some time to agree had gone through Cabinet and Council, I believe, and to that extent should have been perceived and believed to be completely independent of its origin, has had one good meeting by, I think, a fair assessment from those, not myself, who were present, and positive comments from parents, and has suddenly being stopped and changed probably out of all recognition. So concerns on a number of fronts that we trust are being considered carefully in the light of this proposal. Thank you very much.
Certainly, I know Councillor Constable was very keen to get all views, so make sure that there's a clear engagement there, because I think part of the feeling was to try and broaden out not just the elected member representation, because I think there was a feeling it was important to include members of the opposition as well, as those in the administration. Principally, it was one of the drivers behind looking at this format. But given the importance that we've placed on positive destinations as a council, and the number of streams that attach to that all the way through the education system, really to have a formal committee was a lot of the thinking behind this, to really give weight to the importance that we place on the direction that we're trying to travel as a committee. We'll make sure that there's full engagement, because at the moment Councillor Constable is gathering views and looking at the other options that are in operation. And you're right, I mean, essentially in general there's two models, there's the cabinet or the committees, but a number of councils do operate a bit of a mix, and it certainly can work, and it's about trying to get the best outcome for those that we're representing. So yeah, I think we'll make sure that there is the necessary levels of engagement there to make sure that all views are taken account of and come into a final proposal that will come to Council in March.
Thanks, Owen. I mean, I don't want to add to what Paul has very eloquently said already. I'm just slightly wondering, the last paragraph 3 at the bottom of the page, that when we get to Council in March that this is a fait accompli. I would hope that certainly as the church reps have a clear, if you like, statutory position in all of this, that there will be some consultation with us. It may be, in fact, in the light of some of that I've heard, that this is not a fait accompli, that this is the start of a debate, which I think could be a very fruitful debate, quite frankly. And there are a lot of pluses to education committees, as long as we understand, as Paul has explained, there are a lot of other implications in terms of, for instance, our role at Cabinet and things like that. So I think we wait with some excitement to be kept involved in the process, as you've promised, Leader. Thanks very much, Owen.
Absolutely, and I think that is very much the intention of this, so make sure that happens. With that, can we note the report? Any other comments, questions? Thank you. That then takes us on to item 9, which is the report on an evaluation of tobacco control in Midlothian.
Sorry. Thank you, Chair. This report is to make Cabinet aware, particularly of a local tobacco alliance, which is a forum predominantly led by NHS, includes local authorities and third sector agencies. There hasn't been such an alliance previously in Midlothian, but we are being invited to nominate a lead officer to act as a representative through the NHS Lothian Tobacco Strategy Board, which coordinates implementation of the tobacco control strategy for the Scottish Government. As is detailed in Section 3 in terms of smoking cessation, there's a range of measures where Midlothian tends to perform more poorly than the Scottish average, whether that's adults aged 16, pregnant women, and indeed those youths who are under age of 16, the prevalence of smoking in Midlothian counters the reducing trend nationally. At 3.6, taking account of those trends, the future planning for the delivery of cessation services is detailed in terms of what would be led through the alliance. Locally, enforcement tends currently to be led through trading standard services, as all tobacco retailers were required to be registered since October of 2011, and activity in enforcement through 2012 has been through test purchasing. The most recent activity in 2013 noted that there's a reduction in retailers from 152 when the exercise was last carried out in 2012 to 126 in 2013, which again matches the national trend in reduction of tobacco premises. In terms of activity from the Alliance, this is detailed in 5.4 in terms of a range of measures which have proved significant where other local tobacco alliances have delivered in partnership between the NHS, the local authority and the third sector. And the recommendation is that we form a local tobacco alliance involving the NHS, Midlothian Council and third sector and participate in this as part of the Joint Health Improvement Partnership for Midlothian.
Thanks, Kevin. I think this is a very positive step and it's certainly to be encouraged. Could I just ask, on the test purchases, Kevin, are these targeted? Do we go on the basis of intel that's gathered to decide who's visited, or is it a random sample across the council area?
It is a random sample, yes.
I mean, is there an element of information gathering to see where problems may or may not be? I mean, do we take that into account as well?
Certainly, where there are concerns from other community planning partners, whether that's the police or CLD, certainly that will inform some of the choices about areas that are being targeted. And in partnership now with Environmental Health and Trading Standards with East Lothian, the proposal is that we swap volunteers so that people are not operating within their own doorstep, so that there are those safeguards, because it is anybody who's aged under 16, so there are surveillance requirements that need to be complied with.
Paul.
Thank you, Owen. Again, echoing that it is a very important area. I was interested to note the links on page 31 in 5.4, numbers 3, 4, and 6 are all education links, and obviously that's clear and vital and important to see. I just wondered, the pilot of a highly successful number four prevention approach, is there anybody who could comment on how well that's going and how the linking into education is carried through, please?
I'm afraid I don't have that detail, but we could certainly provide that, as I'm afraid neither health or education representatives are in the chamber at present.
I'm delighted to read this report, and certainly I would give my wholehearted support to this. I think the challenge we face, Owen, is I remember in the early mid-80s, we mounted a very successful campaign against smoking, particularly in secondary schools, and it was very successful. There was no doubt we reduced it. I think we were perhaps in the long term more successful to some extent with boys and girls, to be honest, and that was through the sporting link. The challenge that faces schools is that we're now fighting on so many different fronts. We've got to deal with drugs, we've got to deal with misuse of mobile phones, and the list goes on and on. It's a very challenging society, it's a very exciting society, but it has meant that smoking has been knocked down the list. Therefore, I am very pleased to see under 5.4 that item 3 and item 6, because I do think there is still a lot of good work being done in secondary schools, and I'm sure in primary schools, but that when they go to FE colleges, there's probably nothing. And that is can be the danger zone if people have already smoked or can even be encouraged to smoke. So I think this is a great report, and I certainly would wish to highlight point 3 and point 6 in 5.4. So good luck with it.
Thank you. Can we agree the recommendations? Thank you very much. Which then takes us to item 10, which is the development plan scheme from the Lothian.
Thanks, Chair. Each planning authority is required to prepare and submit annually to Scottish Ministers a development plan scheme for its area. This is a procedural document, not a policy document, I should hasten to add. The planning authority's intention to prepare, review and consult on its local development plan, and for those authorities like Midlothian, which are within a strategic development planning area, it also covers the strategic development plan. It's a very well prescribed format which comprises a programme for the preparation of those plans and a participation statement identifying just how there will be genuine participation with the public and stakeholders. The development plan scheme for 2014-15 is number 6 in the annual series, and there's a copy attached to the report. The report itself just gives a very brief overview of progress on the strategic and local development plans as they relate to Midlothian. Recommendations, Chair, are to approve the development plan scheme number 6 for publication and submitting as required to Scottish Ministers.
Thanks, Ian. Clearly, I mean, I think it's important to note the point you make about it being a procedural report. There obviously is still the work underway on development of the Midlothian local plan and workshops coming up for elected members on that. But I think just looking at the Appendix 2 and actually seeing the list of interactive activities that took place combined into one page, it's quite impressive. Just to show the extent of the opportunities that were available to engage in the process. So I'm certainly happy to accept the recommendations. Any other comments on the report?
Just to say, the report will be ready by the end of March, will it, Ian? The DPSM 6.
Yeah, that it's prepared. It's as appended to the report. So if it's approved, then that will simply be now taken and sent straight on to the ministers and put on our website and published generally.
Thank you. Which then takes us on to item number 11, Earth Hour.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of this report is to advise Cabinet of the Council's plans to participate and encourage community involvement in Earth Hour 2014. Earth Hour is a worldwide grassroots movement for the planet organised by the Worldwide Fund for Nature, dating from 2007. And the event is held annually towards the end of March. The purpose is to encourage individuals, communities, households, businesses to turn off non-essential lights for 1 hour as a symbol of their commitment to the sustainability and well-being of the planet. So, in terms of paragraph 2.2, it's proposed to switch off decorative lighting across the council's property during Earth Hour to encourage community groups and organisations to participate and to encourage residents and businesses where appropriate to switch off lights for up to an hour on Saturday the 29th of March 2014, which is the date of the event, from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. And I think this is, from the council's point of view, about turning off non-essential lighting. I think there's a role here in terms of you know, a press release to encourage participation, and also I suggest officers and councillors through their networks and contacts encouraging community groups, community councils and other organisations to be part of this.
Thanks, Kenneth. I mean, certainly I know, or I would hope that our schools are going to be actively involved in undertaking activities around Earth Hour. Certainly it was useful that we received a presentation at the Church Liaison group on Earth Hour, which I think was very useful for all those in attendance there. I'm looking at the school's interaction and the challenge there, I'm perhaps willing to put myself on the line here to say I'm willing to undertake a challenge if our schools can come up with enough pupils participating and generating support for Earth Hour. I'm willing to put myself on the line to undertake a challenge that they would pose me to try and perhaps encourage greater participation. I'm not sure maybe what I'm letting myself in for, but I'm willing to take the chance on that one. So more than happy to do that. Paul.
Thank you, Convener, and brave man. I'm tempted to say it, and I think I should say I will consider volunteering with you. It's with some trepidation that I make this observation. I take the point that Kenneth has made about we need to connect with other networks to involve others and set the example. And I'm glad, Owen, that you mentioned the source of this, because it was because of that I noticed this item as I was scanning through, and I read it quickly through, and I thought, why am I disturbed about this? And it isn't necessarily, and I don't think it really is a comment on this particular report. I suppose that the thing that hit me between the face, or at least picked up my notice, was just the comment, there is a potential reputation risk if Ms. Lothian Council does not participate in Earth Hour 2014, there could be criticism. I think that's a valid point. And I think what I want to mention is that I think that's selling it short and selling our role short. You know, the comment has been made that we need to connect with other and use a positive thing. And I'm wondering whether this is, I suppose the practical comment is, could we consider renaming all of those risks to risk and opportunity? And reflecting that risk is not a negative thing, that risk is a positive thing, but because that is conceptually difficult, then it may be as sensible to think in all our reports of talking about risk and opportunity. And it's only, and I suppose the subsidiary observation is to do with all council papers, and that is from section 3 through to typically section 5 in all the council papers. You sort of scan over it and say, okay, yeah, we've covered our backs. And all that really matters in the substance of a paper is sections 2 and the last bit. And I know that's probably a gross simplification and me going over the top. But I do think we need to reflect on whether we do, and it may be I'm completely unjustified in this observation, but could we be more positive in considering the things that we have to do and whether they also need to reflect the opportunities that are there. And I could be completely off the wall on this.
Perhaps bring Kenneth in on that, but I mean, I know certainly that sort of the content and format of the report says something that does come up in conversation fairly regularly. And there have been some adaptations made over time, but Kenneth, do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is very easy to kind of skip over these sections. It's actually quite useful sometimes when people pick up on some of the wording there, because the risk is, if I can use that word, that these become kind of procedural and bureaucratic responses. I mean, I think that, and I couldn't quote chapter and verse on the requirements that we need to fulfil in such a report. I mean, I think that all our reports should focus on opportunity wherever possible. And in fact, there's relatively few reports we bring before the council that don't have very positive aspects to them. And I think it's important that these positive aspects are brought out. And I think that that point is very well made. I mean, I don't think I'd suggest we have a section entitled Risk and Opportunity. I think we are obliged to think about risk, but I think we're also obliged in the context of our wider reports to emphasise the opportunity. And we're not doing this because we might get criticised if we don't do it. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do. And I think that sometimes officer reports have a little bit of an inbuilt defensiveness, which I hope as a, you know, a positive and progressive council we can continue to overcome.
Okay, thank you. With that, can we accept the recommendations in the report? And I'll look forward to input into potential challenges. Item 12, if I could take members to that, is the Scottish Borders Council proposed local development plan.
Yep, thanks, Chair. This is the normal process of consultation being undertaken by one of our neighbouring planning authorities, it's Scottish Borders Council, on their proposed local development plan. Just to remind you, the process of statutory process is that councils prepare a main issues report, and then once they've had the representations on that and considered all of that, they then move to the proposed plan, which is quite an advanced stage. As you know, as far as Midlothian is concerned, we've been through the main issues report phase. We're now moving towards the proposed plan. Scottish Borders are just one step further on, and they've just prepared and produced their proposed local development plan and have consulted all their neighbouring authorities, including Midlothian. At the main issues report stage, Midlothian gave a number of views on a range of topics which were in the Scottish Borders Council MIR. In terms of the issues to raise in looking at this proposed plan, you'll see from the report picked out a number. One is the issue of transport impact, which this council has mentioned more than once to Scottish Borders, which is this whole issue of, if you look at the journey to work patterns for the areas to the south of Edinburgh, not surprisingly, there's quite a substantial amount of people who come through Midlothian to get to work in Edinburgh on a daily basis. And we just feel that the local development plan needs to at least identify and have a reference to just the consequences of that and how they'd be addressing them. In respect of the wind energy developments and their areas of search, certainly along the southern boundary of this council's area, everybody knows that just beyond the southern boundary, a number of upland areas, which the scarp slopes of which look down onto our area, and we think there are some changes that are needed there to curb the potential for cumulative development of wind farms having an adverse landscape impact on this area. And finally, just in relation to the haul routes for minerals, again, which could well be looking towards coming up through Midlothian into up towards the Edinburgh bypass. Again, just some recognition of that and a little bit more detail in their local development plan in relation to that. So those are the issues which it's recommended, Chair, this council makes formal representations to Scottish Borders Council on. And obviously, if that's approved, those representations will be made, and we would need to see what sort of response comes back from that council.
Under paragraph 3.1, Ian, it's not really anything to do with the report, but I heard how much a single train ticket was going to cost on the new railway line. I just wondered, we have no input, presumably, to how much they're going to charge. And I think it'll be not as well used as we'd hoped.
I'm not aware of what the pricing structure is that they've put on. In terms of the level of control, probably I would suspect not a lot, because it's a Transport Scotland Network Rail contract, and that's where it'll be run through Network Rail. So I would have thought that there'd probably be a limited amount of impact, but I'm not speaking as an expert on that. All I would say from a planning perspective is that if you look at the performance of some of the new railways, of new lines that have opened in Scotland in the past few years, Airdrie Bathgate being a good example, The level of patronage has been at times well above what was predicted. And whatever pricing structure they've had for those lines, what we've seen is pressure actually on terms of the amount of rolling stock they can actually get on the lines and the signalling constraints they have. So my expectation, maybe from a slightly anecdotal viewpoint, but certainly on the experience of elsewhere in Scotland, is that I think we will see the Borders Rail line very heavily used.
I think it is almost universal that every new line has exceeded the predicted usage numbers once it's opened. It's quite spectacular, the number of people who want to travel by train.
It was just under £10 for a single. So if anybody's going to commute to Edinburgh working, it's going to be £100 a week for travel expenses, which seems to me to be on the high side. But I know this forum's not the place to do anything about that.
I think in the point you're making and the suggested response at 3-1 and transport is an important one. We know that Transport Scotland have serious issues about impact on the bypass and from any new development in large parts of Midlothian, and clearly any traffic coming through from the borders will impact on that. Do we know if Transport Scotland raise similar issues with the borders, or did they simply take them up with us because we happen to be the council that's immediately contributing?
I've not been party to any particular discussions between Transport Scotland and Scottish Borders. What I do know is that at the CESPLAN level, and of course Scottish Borders also a council in CESPLAN, there's a fair bit of activity and discussion which I've been involved with at officer level with Transport Scotland and the neighbouring authorities to say that there needs to be a strategic understanding of just what the impact on the strategic road network will be of developments across the CESPLAN area. And I'm hoping that through Strategic Development Plan number 2 that will be identified. So I think it can be picked up, probably quite rightly, at strategic level, and that allied to the comments, hopefully if approved for submission from this council, can at least reinforce that point.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Any other questions or comments? We're happy to approve the suggested responses and agree the recommendations in the report. Thank you. That then takes us into